searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
The Democrat Party has become too extreme to be trusted with power. Their radical policies are a danger to your family and to your country.
We're watching that unfold right now in America. Democrats would have us declare martial law and become a dictatorship. Wow. Hi there. Welcome into this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping that you and yours are doing well. We're looking at the weekend. We're so close to it, you can reach out and touch it. And I don't know what you've got planned for the weekend, but hopefully it involves a bit more than sheltering in place. One thing I've learned in this week is that my sheltering in place life is identical to my non-sheltering in place life. I mean, come on. Well, I live in a studio all the time. It is a gray day in my neighborhood. I don't know how it is where you are, but right now things are overcast. It's a bit breezy. It looks like we may get some rain today, and that's good. It'll clear the pollen out of the air. I don't have COVID-19. I have pollen 2020, and I'm hoping that you're in better shape than a lot of people are. It's a bizarre news day. There's a lot of stuff going on around the country, and it all revolves really around COVID-19, the coronavirus, the Chinese virus, and other things that are going on. It is an odd situation that we're in right now. And I am one who believes that it's not as bad as they make it out to be. And that we should exercise a bit of caution, but we're looking at the facts and the figures. And when you look at the actual facts and figures, things are not adding up to what they say they are. And when you see politicians, professional politicians, lifelong politicians, career people, are scrambling to tell America this is an emergency, and that we need to do all of these things in order to help you through the emergency, red flag should pop up, because politicians love nothing more than power and control and being the hero. Whenever they get an opportunity to be the hero, they take that opportunity to be the hero. And once they've got that, whatever you grant them in that process, you know what I mean. You tell them, okay, it's okay for you to pass this law. Okay, it's all right for you to take control of this. Okay, it's all right for you to mandate this. Yeah. More often than not, once they have that, they don't let it go. So please be careful what you ask for, because in this day and time, we're watching a lot of people who spent January trying to impeach our president. They spent all this time trying to undermine a president. They've been focused on destroying Donald Trump while he was focused on dealing with the coronavirus. I posted yesterday to social media an entire breakdown of how that actually happened. And I'm going to pull that up here in a little bit and make reference to it. And I'll put it in the show notes today so that you can see. It's actually, I don't know that I could get through all of it during this brief podcast, because there's so many things day after day after day after day after day. Things that were actually going on in the current presidential administration dealing with the corona Chinese virus. While the leftist politicians were out there grandstanding and trying to destroy the president, he was working on things every single day. There were things happening almost every single day. In the early days, it was week by week, and as things developed, it became more day by day. And there are things that were done that you don't know about, most likely, because the mainstream press, the progressive press, it's not convenient for them to let you know. Because then you would actually know how much has been done. And their fairy tale about a president not doing anything, would not hold water. So we may look at that in a little bit. At the very least, I will make sure that the link to that is in the show notes, and I will probably copy and paste the majority, well, the list, into a post on dailyperspectivepodcast.com today. And if you are one who follows that, subscribes to the RSS feed, you will get a notice about that. And you will see. Let's see, what else is there? Yesterday, yesterday turned into another gray day for me. I've been wanting to play for a couple of days. I've been wanting to get out and take the drone and fly over things and just enjoy a change of scenery from a bird's eye view. Seriously. I have a DJI drone and I also have the video goggles that go with the drone, the HD video goggles. So I can watch from the drone's perspective as it flies. And from time to time, I like to go out into the countryside and I like to fly the drone and just get way up in the air and look at the countryside. And it's just, there's just something about it. That's just, there's nothing quite like it, except possibly actually flying a plane or a helicopter or something like that. There's just something about it. And I seriously enjoy it. And I was hoping to get out and do that because it's something I can do literally in the middle of nowhere. I don't have to go to a store. I don't have to go to a movie theater. I don't have to go to a restaurant or a sporting event. I just go out in the middle of nowhere, maybe take a bottle of water with me and just enjoy. And so far, I haven't been able to do that because the weather is just crap. It's just awful. But I did play some more with the little computer that I've been working on. I've mentioned this the last couple of days. And I'm going to have to put this as a big check in the win column because this little thing works like a champ. It's just awesome. I need to move it someplace, but I've got to get an Ethernet cable before I can do that. I thought I had... Oh, yeah, I got plenty of those around here. I've got, you know, you use them, you coil them up, you stick them away, you got that sort of a thing. I've had to use Ethernet cables in remote access situations. I've got a case over here against the wall. I'll just open that case and pull out some of my gear, and sure enough, there's an Ethernet cable there. Every one of my have is bad. They've been run over by chairs or hand trucks, or the ends of them have been broken or whatever. In some cases, the result of being manhandled by interns who don't know how to wrap cables, things like that. And so now they're all bad. So I got to go spend a few bucks today, which means, yes, I will have to go to a store at some point today. But once I get that done, once I get it hooked up, it'll be perfectly headless. I can access it from any Mac in the house or in the studio for that matter. And I'll be able to assign it a certain task. And I'm working on how that works right now because I've got a project I'm working on or another podcast that it actually is, I'm directly associated with. And if I can pull that off, I can use this little computer to do remote connections with people, and it'll sound like we're sitting in the same studio. I'm still working on how to make that happen because I need to be able to feed audio back that doesn't include the audio coming from them, and my cheap little mixer won't do that. Anyway, we'll work that out. But that's really yesterday. I spent some more time working that situation out. So now that little computer is sitting over here by my right hand, and it's powered up, but there's not a keyboard, there's not a monitor, there's not a mouse connected to it, and I can pull it up on any of my screens, and I can access it, I can use it, I can get on the web with it, I can do all kinds of stuff remotely. It is now operating, as they say, headless, which makes me a very happy camper. Yes, it does. It is, we're about 9 minutes into the podcast, and I'm looking at my list of things to talk about. Tulsi Gabbard finally officially announced that she is suspending her long-shot presidential campaign. She has decided she's not going to play the game anymore. She will be moving forward. She made the announcement in a video posted to Twitter yesterday, and this move comes as former VP Joe Biden consolidates support in the party and builds a massive delegate lead over his only remaining rival in the primary race, Senator Bernie Sanders. In the video, Gabbard offered her full support of Biden, But she also praised Sanders. Gabbard, who backed the populist senator's 2016 White House bid, said, "I have great appreciation for Senator Sanders' love for our country and the American people and his sincere desire to improve the lives of all Americans." Do I need to say anything else? Or is that enough to tell you where Tulsi's head actually is? That she sees Bernie Sanders as someone who loves America and desires to improve the lives of all Americans. Now, he may love the American people, and he may have a sincere desire to improve the lives of all Americans, but he does not love this country. Not if he wants to transform it fundamentally into a democratic socialist nation. He does not love this country, and if his love for this country is translated through democratic socialism, he does not understand what it actually is. He believes in the fantasy, not the reality. Gabbard's a four-term congresswoman. She, in 2012, became the first Hindu elected to Congress. She launched her presidential campaign in January of last year. The Hawaii National Guard officer who served in the Iraq War advocated for a foreign policy that stressed that the U.S. stay out of overseas conflicts and entanglements. But Gabbard was repeatedly criticized for her January 2000 trip to Syria, where she met with Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad and toured the city of Aleppo after it had been blasted to rubble by Assad's regime. Gabbard's anti-intervention stance was blasted by 2016 Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, who referred to the congressman as the favorite of, or the congresswoman, I should say, as the favorite of the Russians, and suggested Gabbard was being groomed as a third-party candidate for the general election. Gabbard, saying she was defamed by Clinton, sued her in January for $100 million. Clinton has moved to dismiss the lawsuit. The candidate, 38 years of age, who was the second youngest contender of the in the race after former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, also had to apologize early in her campaign for past anti-gay comments and actions. A decade and a half earlier, she actively promoted traditional marriage and several times referred to LGBTQ activists as homosexual extremists. So in that, you can see that she abandoned her convictions for the sake of her politics. Gabbard also repeatedly clashed with the Democratic National Committee over their presidential nomination debate criteria, which prevented the congresswoman and many of her rivals from making the stage. Earlier this month, she was one of the first in Congress to push for universal basic income payments, made popular by former 2020 rival Andrew Yang, as a way to provide instant relief to Americans affected by the massive economic downturn caused by the coronavirus outbreak. Universal basic income, UBI, is a socialist. It's a socialist precept. It's a socialist concept. It's something that the socialists believe should happen, that the government should just issue checks to everybody every month. It is a socialist concept, and she embraced it. Still does. She spent much of her time early this year campaigning in New Hampshire, which holds the first primary in the White House race and votes second in the nominating calendar after Iowa. She even rented a home in the state, but she finished a disappointing seventh place in the primary, winning only 3% of the vote. She barely registered in the Nevada caucuses, won just 1% of the vote in South Carolina, and in many of the Super Tuesday contests. But Gabbard stayed in the race even after every candidate other than Biden and Sanders dropped out. In the contests in the past 2 weeks, Gabbard often won fewer votes than candidates who had already departed the race. In other words, even people who had dropped out got more votes than she did. In Tuesday's primary in Florida, she grabbed less than 1% of the vote. She finished behind former candidate Mike Bloomberg, Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Amy Klobuchar, not even running anymore, and she finished behind them. In the delegate race, she just won two of them, and both coming from her Native American Samoa. So Tulsi Gabbard is now dusty bones, cracked pots, old stuff. Tulsi Gabbard is history. I'm sure, however, that we will see her, much like vampires in horror novels, we will see her rise again at some point in the future to run in hopes of securing the first woman president spot in history. And hopefully America will be sane enough to remember who and what Tulsi Gabbard truly is. I hope you will. There's more after the break when the Daily Perspective continues.
When I was a child, I thought as a child and spoke as a child. But when I became a man, I took that child out back and had him shot.
Oh, that's a little extreme. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Happy Friday. Hope you're having a good one so far. Well, did you see the shenanigans happening amongst certain people in Washington, D.C. as relates to the stock market? Yeah, this is interesting stuff. Last night, Tucker Carlson on Fox News called on Senator Richard Burr, the Republican of North Carolina, to resign if he can't explain why he sold millions of dollars worth of stock in mid-February before the market fell amid the coronavirus outbreak. Carlson said on his show he had inside information about what could happen to our country, which is now happening. Burr was reportedly briefed about the potentially devastating effects of the virus in the U.S. last month. Carlson says, but he didn't warn the public. Carlson said Burr didn't even disavow a Fox News op-ed he co-wrote with Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee just 10 days before, claiming that America was better prepared than ever before the coronavirus. He said Burr instead dumped his shares in hotel stocks so he wouldn't lose money. Then he stayed silent. Carlson added, if there's an honest explanation for Burr's actions, he should explain himself. Otherwise, he must resign from the Senate and face prosecution for insider trading. There is no greater moral crime than betraying your country in a time of crisis. Burr is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He attended closed-doors meetings for weeks about the growing health crisis, along with Senator Kelly Loeffler, a Republican from Georgia, a member of the Senate Health Committee, who is also accused of selling much of her stock in January. Senator Burr filed a financial disclosure form for personal transactions made several weeks before the U.S. and financial markets showed signs of volatility due to the growing coronavirus outbreak, says a Burr spokesperson. As the situation continues to evolve daily, he has been deeply concerned by the steep and sudden toll this pandemic is taking on our country. He supported Congress's immediate efforts to provide $7.8 billion for response efforts and this week's bipartisan bill to provide relief for American businesses and small families. Burr sold somewhere between $500,000 and $1.5 million worth of his holdings in February. On February 13th, in 29 separate transactions, according to ProPublica. This followed another report by NPR, which alleges that Burr warned a small group of well-connected constituents at a luncheon in late February about the potential impact of the virus, according to a secret recording of the conversation obtained by NPR. Burr said in that recording, "There's one thing that I can tell you about this. It is much more aggressive in its transmission than anything we have seen in recent history. It's probably more akin to the 1918 pandemic." So we have, actually, there's more people than just these two mentioned in this article. So we have people in politics using their inside information to benefit financially in the stock market. This is not new. This has happened before. Most famously, Hillary Rodham Clinton, cattle futures. If you don't remember it, look it up. She made a lot of money in a very short period of time in cattle futures, something nobody in real life has been able to duplicate. Oddly enough. How about that? Profiting from inside knowledge. All I can do is shake my head. And at the same time, I can also help but wonder who else did the same thing. We have a couple of Republicans who've been outed. I have a feeling they've been outed for strategic purposes. What they did is no less onerous, and it's no less nasty, it's no less dishonest. But I have a feeling Republicans are being outed for political reasons. And the same thing has been happening on the Democrat side. But will we hear about them? I doubt it. I doubt it. Well, over on the left coast, California Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom has announced during a press conference late yesterday that he has issued a statewide order for the entire state of California to shelter in place due to the outbreak of the coronavirus, which originated in China. He said, "We are not victims of circumstance. We can make decisions to meet moments, and this is a moment we need to make tough decisions. This is a moment where we need some straight talk, and we need to tell people the truth. We need to bend the curve in the state of California, and in order to do that, we need to recognize the reality. The fact is, the experience we are having on the ground throughout the state of California, the experience that is manifesting all across the United States, and for that matter, around the rest of the world, requires us to adjust our thinking and to adjust our activities. In the state of California, many people are very familiar with these adjustments. A number of days ago, there were six Bay Area counties that led with stay-at-home orders. Now, as I speak, some 21.3 million Californians reside in a community, in a city, and or a county that have similar orders. A state as large as ours, a nation state, is many parts." What? A nation state? Oh, in your dreams. "Is many parts. But at the end of the day, we are one body. There is a mutuality and there's a recognition of our interdependence that requires of this moment that we direct a statewide order for people to stay home. That directive goes into force and effect this evening, and we are confident that people of the state of California will abide by it. We'll do the right thing. They'll meet this moment. They'll step up, as they have over the course of the last number of weeks, to protect themselves, to protect their families, and to protect the broader community in this great state, in the world that we reside in." He said that the order would be enforced through social pressure from people's peers. He says, "As I say, there is a social contract here. People, I think, recognize the need to do more and to meet this moment. People will self-regulate their behavior. They'll begin to adjust and adapt as they have been quite significantly. We will have social pressure that will encourage people to do the right thing. Just a nod and look saying, hey, maybe you should reconsider just being out there on the beach." I don't believe the people of California need to be told through law or enforcement that it's appropriate just to home isolate, protect themselves, go about the essential patterns of life, but do so by socially distancing themselves from others and do so using your common sense. Newsom said that the coronavirus outbreak was spreading so quickly that the virus would impact about 56% of California's population. Every time I read something like this, what keeps floating in my mind is fear. That politicians are using fear. And I understand that in order to curb infection, we need to be wise. But still, they're using fear. I'm not going to go back and quote the figures for you again, but they're still out there. And when you look at the number of deaths we have on record now, the number of cases we have on record now, and the number of recovered, it still doesn't match influenza that happens every year. There have been 105,000, I said I wouldn't want to quote stats, but very briefly, 105,594 seasonal flu deaths so far this year. That's how many so far this year. Flu, 105,000 this year. And let's see here. Right now, 10,407 deaths worldwide from coronavirus, but almost 90,000 recoveries, a total of almost 254,000 coronavirus cases. So we're looking at something that isn't making as large of an impact as the seasonal flu. And I go back to it again. We're creating a panic because of that. I know you have to be careful. I know you have to be cautious, but creating a panic and then going on television and telling people don't panic, but be afraid anyway. Something we all have to understand, we all have to remember in these times, is that fear is a tool used by politicians to gain power and control. Contrast what Gavin Newsom is doing with what the president's doing. The president is encouraging America. He's cautioning America on one hand, but on the other hand, he's encouraging America. What we need now is wisdom, not panic.
Respect my authority!
Okay, all right. You don't have to get all out of sorts. Take a step back, please. Social distancing. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Well, the State Department yesterday issued a level 4 travel advisory for international travel. That's the highest level of advisory. They were warning Americans not to travel abroad, telling any currently overseas, come home, return to the United States, according to Business Insider. The move comes as countries try to contain the spread of the coronavirus, which has so far infected more than 227,000 people and killed more than 9,300 people across the planet. Three individuals with knowledge of the announcement, which Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has approved, told Politico that Americans abroad will either have to return to the United States or get ready to shelter where they are. A state had already issued a level 3 travel advisory that recommends Americans reconsider traveling overseas, but now it's level 4. They're saying, please don't. Don't do it. Multiple current and former U.S. diplomats told Politico that they can't recall this level of travel advisory ever being issued before. President Donald Trump has already banned travel from several countries, including all of Europe, in an attempt to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Pompeo said on Wednesday that his department is doing everything we can to protect American citizens all across the world. We know of students that are in Peru, some other travelers that are there as well. There are other countries, too, where those countries have shut down their airports. We're working to try and solve the problems for each of those American citizens. We just learned about them over the last couple of days. It'll take some amount of time, but know that President Trump has made clear that we're going to do everything we can to get every American home safely. According to Business Insider, before the blanket warning on Thursday, 16 countries had level 4 advisories, including Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Iran, and China. So now we have a level 4. Do not travel advisory for international travel. If you were planning on going someplace in the midst of all this, you're not going to do it now. And I suggest that you call your airline, talk to your travel agent, see what's happening, see where you are. I think in many cases, you can postpone. When we look at here domestically, what's going on, the big destinations. Let's take Disney, for example. So many people had plans to go in the spring to Walt Disney World, to Universal Studios, to Disneyland in California, and other parks like that. These big travel destinations, these family vacation destinations, they're all closed up now. And they all have adjustment plans. All of them do. You just have to go to their websites and see what their statements are and make adjustments. In many cases, they're going to honor what you've paid for. In many cases, particularly with things like hotel reservations, I watched a video yesterday about how Disney's handling this, and that if you can't make your reservation, if your reservation day comes and goes, they're just going to give you a refund on your hotel stay. As far as your park tickets, those will be good. Unused tickets will be good for a while. Just go to their website and see how long, and you'll be able to reschedule that trip and go at some other time. And your tickets will still be good. I think Universal's probably doing the same thing, as are many other places. That's one example. I mean, just here in the United States, if you were planning on going someplace else, if you wanted to go to Paris, nope. I suggest that you just watch videos and reschedule that trip, because it's not happening now. It's just not happening right now. See, what else is there? Oh, gosh. Oh, my word. Hey, by the way, if you're watching on YouTube, hope you're enjoying the screen. I'm not on YouTube. I've been watching too much YouTube lately. If you're watching on Facebook, I hope you enjoy the screen. I look at the earrings. It's a bizarre world we're living in right now. Lots of crazy stuff going on. And one of the crazy things is that the leftist press is losing their freaking minds. They're going absolutely insane. But is there anyone out there who didn't expect cable pundits to turn to the coronavirus outbreak and hope they could make it a Trump ruins everything story? For the last few weeks, CNN and MSNBC's talking heads have taken cheap political shots at the Trump administration's handling of this pandemic, while their characterization of the situation, ranging from dangerous to the worst government response ever. As told by TV journalists, the story of the 2020 Wuhan coronavirus epidemic is that of a bumbling administration whose gross and perhaps criminal incompetence endangered countless American lives. MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell offered a particularly revolting version of this argument during the March 12th edition of The Last Word. And this is what that sounded like. As long as we're playing him, let's play a handful. Here's about a minute of leftist media insanity.
More people are sick in America tonight because Donald Trump is president. More people are dead and dying in America tonight because Donald Trump is president.
This crisis seems to have been designed to bring out the worst of Trump.
Do you think it's cost people their lives?
When he's saying don't test people because then the number of cases will go up, I mean, that's Chernobyl-level gaslighting.
I mean, when coronavirus broke out in China, people said this is China's Chernobyl. Actually, it's Donald Trump's Chernobyl.
You've called this his Chernobyl.
What the Iran hostage crisis was the final year of Carter's presidency.
This may be Donald Trump's Katrina.
Looks like a Hurricane Katrina moment.
What happened to Katrina? That's where we are now.
An event like this, just like with Katrina, I mean, you think back to Katrina, it does harken back to Katrina.
We're in the middle of a pandemic, and time this president comes out, he gives inaccurate information.
The worst emergency response to a pandemic that we have ever seen in this country.
And Donald Trump should take the next month off and golf while someone else handles it.
Now, none of that actually jives with reality. None of it. None of it actually works with what's really going on. And refreshingly, yesterday in one of the White House news appearances by the president, a reporter actually stepped up and told the truth.
Do you consider the term Chinese food racist because it's food that originates in China or it has Chinese?
No, I don't think it's racist. I don't think it's racist at all.
On that note, major left-wing news media, even in this room, have teamed up with Chinese Communist Party narratives, and they're claiming you are racist for making these claims about Chinese virus. Is it alarming that major media players just to oppose you are consistently siding with foreign state propaganda, Islamic radicals, and Latin gangs and cartels, and they work right here at the White House with direct access to you and your team?
It amazes me when I read the things that I read. It amazes me when I read the Wall Street Journal, which is always so negative. It amazes me when I read the New York Times is not even, I barely read it. You know, we don't distribute it in the White House anymore, and the same thing with the Washington Post. Because, you see, I know the truth. And people out there in the world, they really don't know the truth. They don't know what it is. They use different slogans and different concepts for me almost every week, trying to catch something. Last week, it was all chaos. You see me, there's no chaos. I have no chaos. I'm the one telling everybody to be calm. There's no chaos at the White House. We have unbelievable professionals. It's really, I mean, I think I came up with the term. I hope I came up with the term, but it is fake news. It's more than fake news. It's corrupt news. And you know what? Someday, hopefully in 5 years, I won't be here, and that'll be fine. I will have done, I think, a great job, because I don't think anyone's done as much in 3.5 years as I've done. I don't think, and the administration. This administration's done a great job. But the press is very dishonest.
Siding with state propaganda.
Well, I think they do. I mean, they are siding with China. They are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. They're siding with many others. China's the least of it. So why they're doing this, you'll have to ask them. But if we had an honest media in this country, our country would be an even greater place. So, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely true. If we had an honest media in this country, our country would be an even greater place. And that was a reporter from OAN. The OAN News Network, who he said right before that audio particular clip started, that he said, thank you very much. You're very fair. You're very kind to me. And they are. And as a result of that reporter's question and her statement beforehand about how this is not, I mean, she goes off setting the stage by asking, do you think eating the Chinese food, calling a Chinese food is racist? He said, of course not. And yet, everyone who is raising a hissy, having a hissy fit about the president referring to this as a Chinese virus, will say, hey, let's order Chinese. You're racist. Racist! Yes. Because
everything is racist! Everything is racist according to me. Everything is racist in 2017.
Yeah, and even now in 2020, it is racist. Why? Because it plays to the advantage of the progressive media. The progressives have to play on emotion. As I said yesterday, when you label something as racist, you begin negate everything that person says. If someone says, well, it's a Chinese virus. China's from viruses from China. And you say, well, that's just racist. Then people who don't think, those who do not think, those who feel their way through life with their emotions are immediately offended. They have chosen to be offended by this. And from that point forward, they stop thinking about what's going on. And they become emotional about it. And these people, these progressives, understand that emotional manipulation is how they win the weak-minded. And that is exactly what they are trying to do. So when the press makes an issue out of a president referring to the origin, the place of origin, of something we are dealing with, and they try to make it a racist issue, what they're trying to do is manipulate the emotions of the people of our nation. And thinking people see through that. And I hope you are one of those thinking people.
This sounds like it's gonna be hard.
Yeah, it could be. We'll just have to see how this all plays out. Diving into the final segment of today's podcast. Hi there. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast with your sometimes humble host, Mark Congleton. Good to have you along today. It is the 20th day of March in the year 2020. And everything is going crazy. Everything. You would think
it's the end of the world as we know it.
But it's not.
It's the end of the world.
Well, they want you to believe that.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
I know.
I feel fine.
Yeah, I feel fine, too. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty good, even though
human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
And
everything is
canceled. Yes, you can't go anywhere or do anything now because everything is canceled. And it's I'm hoping that your weekend is stacking up to be something that you can at least find a way to enjoy. Spend some time with your loved ones in your social distancing. There are ways to get out of the house and have a good time that don't involve going to movies, going to restaurants, going to bars, going to sporting events. And I sincerely, honestly hope that one of the things that we learn as a result of this is that we don't need sports stars or entertainers in our lives to make them worthwhile. We don't need their product. We don't need their input. We don't need anything about them, quite seriously. Because right now, you can't go to ball games. You can't watch movies. You can't go to the movies. You can't do the things that they want to make a vital part of your everyday life. Entertainment can be as simple as spending some time outdoors with a fishing rod, or like me, with a drone, or something like that. Just getting out. Go get away from everybody. Take the kids. Teach them something about life. That can be your weekend this weekend. And you can have some confidence that things are going in the way they should. Now, I've mentioned this article a couple of times, and I have finally located it. For a little while there, I thought that Facebook had done what it has done so many times and conveniently made something disappear. But not today. The progressive press, the pundits on CNN, and the incredibly, even progressively more loony MSNBC would have you believe that the Trump administration is bumbling this and has bumbled it from day one. Now, remember that China has known about the coronavirus since sometime in November. But December 31st was when they reported the discovery to the World Health Organization, the WHO. Keep in mind also that the WHO kowtows to China. China is doing a lot of funding for them. And then the WHO will take a step back from their stance on things if China asks them to. That's something, you don't believe me, just go look it up. The record is there. All right, let's go through this timeline real quickly so you can see how things were progressing. I've got 6 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, and I won't get to all of it, but I will get to enough of it. And this will be the number one top item on today's show notes list. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com after you've listened to this and look for show notes for today. If you're listening live, and I'm looking at there's people listening live on Facebook Live today, you're going to have to wait for a few minutes, but about a half hour after we get through, everything will be online, including the podcast. But if you're listening live, you're listening to the podcast later on, go look now, dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Look at show notes. The top item It says, timeline, the Trump administration's decisive actions to combat the coronavirus pandemic. December 31, China reports the discovery of the coronavirus to the World Health Organization. 1 week, week later, January 6, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, issued a travel notice for Wuhan, China, due to the spreading coronavirus. 1 day after that, January 7, the CDC established a coronavirus incident management system to better share and respond to information about the virus. January 11, the CDC issued a level 1 travel health notice for Wuhan, China. January 17, the CDC began implementing public health entry screening at the three U.S. airports that received the most travelers from Wuhan, San Francisco, New York, JFK, and Los Angeles. That is less than 3 weeks after China's report to the WHO. Health entry screenings at the three U.S. airports where most people come from those regions. January 20th, Dr. Fauci announced the National Institutes of Health is already working on the development of a vaccine for the coronavirus. That was back January 20th. The next day, the CDC activated its Emergency Operations Center to provide ongoing support to the coronavirus response. January 23rd, 2 days later, the CDC sought a special emergency authorization from the FDA to allow states to use its newly developed coronavirus test. When all of your liberal, progressive friends say, "Where are the tests?" Tell them that on January 23rd, the CDC was trying to get special emergency authorization from the FDA to allow your state to use their newly developed coronavirus test. That was back in January. 4 days later, the CDC issued a level 3 travel health notice, urging Americans to avoid all non-essential travel to China due to the coronavirus. January 29th, the White House announced the formation of the Coronavirus Task Force to help monitor and contain the spread of the virus and provide updates to the president. January 31st, the Trump administration did three things. They declared the coronavirus was a public health emergency. They announced Chinese travel restrictions, and they suspended entry into the United States for foreign nationals who pose a risk of transmitting the coronavirus. And the left all screamed racism. January 31st. We're still in January. The Department of Homeland Security took critical steps to funnel all flights from China into just 7 domestic U.S. airports. Did you know that was happening? That they were funneling all of those flights into places to control access, entry into the country? February 3rd, the CDC had a team ready to travel to China to obtain critical information on the novel coronavirus, but were in the U.S. awaiting permission to enter by the Chinese government. February 4, President Trump vowed in his State of the Union address to take all necessary steps to protect Americans from the coronavirus. February 6th, the CDC began shipping CDC-developed test kits for the 2019 novel coronavirus to U.S. and international labs. That was February 6th. The test kits were already being distributed then. Already. Your progressive friends, the liberals in the press saying the test kits aren't available, are lying to you. February 9th, the White House Coronavirus Task Force briefed governors from across the nation at the National Governors Association meeting in Washington. February 11th, the Department of Health and Human Services expanded a partnership with Janssen Research and Development to expedite the development of a coronavirus vaccine. February 12th, the U.S. shipped test kits for the 2019 novel coronavirus to approximately 30 countries who lacked the necessary reagents and other materials. February 12th, the CDC was prepared to travel to China but had yet to receive permission from the Chinese government. February 14th, the CDC began working with 5 labs to conduct community-based influenza surveillance to study and detect the spread of coronavirus. February 18th, Health and Human Services announced it would engage with Sanofi Pasteur in an effort to quickly develop a corona vaccine and to develop treatment for coronavirus infections. February 24th, the Trump administration sent a letter to Congress requesting at least $2.5 billion to help combat the spread of coronavirus. We're not even out of February yet. and look at all of this activity. Look at everything that's going on in the background. Look at what's happening. And what was the Democrat Party doing? What were the leftist progressives in our government doing? They were trying to impeach a president. They were trying to destroy a president who was trying to save America from what is being perceived as a terrible viral threat. There's even more to this. It goes from there all the way up to today.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?